Recording this part where we're ranting about everything up. I'm like, wait, this is the stuff I really wanted to say.
Uh-huh. You know,
is like, yeah, I mean, I'll repeat myself for the sake of that and recording this, but it's like, why? I mean, I loved tech. I really did love tech just like as a kid. I was really into it. I was programming my little Apple IIe. I was all into, I was making little fucking stop motion animations with our 8 millimeter video cam. I was just super into shit. I was an electrical engineering major, and you know, like in Silicon Valley, the show, you know, that Lena image, the image that main character, you know, you'll see a picture of her. She's a Playboy model, by the way. Her face is, you'll see her face throughout the show, like pinned on his desk or whatever. You know, I know exactly. Like, I was all in that, the same world as him, like the world of digital signal processing. I was working on image and video compression algorithms. I was super into that shit. My dream was to like kind of work in that field of like, you know, sort of like media processing compression or whatever. And then I'm glad I got out of it because, well, one, I started doing, I went to law school and then then they pulled me into fucking patent litigation. And then I met one of my heroes, which is the guy at the Fraunhofer, I forgot his name actually, but the German guy at Fraunhofer who invented MP3. And we deposed him in a lawsuit that involved Dolby. And he told me at the deposition, he was like, all of you lawyers are pieces of shit. He was like, ruined technology. And he's like, you guys are sitting here asking me these stupid questions about, you know, tonal masking or whatever. And you don't understand anything about it. You don't get any of it. You've done none of the work. You just read this shit. And now you want to litigate this stuff? And he wasn't even named in the suit. He was just a hired expert.
Oh, damn.
So he got nothing. You know, we just hired him as an expert, or the other side hired him as an expert to offer expert testimony. And he was so vicious. And he was a hero of mine because I was super into digital signal processing. I was into the math. I was into the technology. I was into all of that shit. And you know, here's the thing is like the world of technology now is nothing about people like him. Nobody knows who that guy is. Nobody gives a shit. It's all about venture capitalists and business plans and CapEx and, you know, 100x returns and software as a service and, you know, early adoption and all this shit. And it's just,
it's business terms.
It is so uninteresting.
The MBAs did a hostile takeover and completely swallowed up the entire industry.
It is so uninteresting.
People making it into like the actual engineers making it, the programmers, the technicians, the mathematicians, all of this, all the people that actually put the work into building this thing, we're just units of labor. We're largely treated as interchangeable, and it's an antagonistic relationship where they're trying to get rid of as much of this expense as possible while selling the barest bones product they can legally get away with.
But here's the thing. If that was the case, if there's a MBA class or, you know, a capitalist class that's doing that, fine. But I understand that, you know, there are business concerns and there are production concerns and there are profit concerns and stuff like that. Get it. The thing that really bothers me, though, is that the way they stole the identity of technologists, where the venture capitalists now think that they're the ones who are inventing all this shit and they're the ones that know the most about this shit and they're the experts because they make their money in that industry, is kind of is tragic that the identity of the technologist and the people who create and fantasize about and think about and modify and tinker with technology and the very like sort of pro-social, pro-human ethic that goes into a lot of that stuff, that was the origin of a lot of this stuff, all of this stuff. To have that culture co-opted by venture capitalist types where they now think that they embody that spirit is really tragic. And I think it's also why technology right now seems so dark and grim, where the technology that I have to pay for and that I have to bring into my house is working against me. I always feel like there's a salesman sitting on my fucking desk or in my pocket, and I've got to be careful about what I put on there or what I say yes to. It's constantly asking me questions, and it's very pushy because the only answer is yes or maybe later. I can't say no. You know what I mean? And so I have to contend with a fucking pushy salesman in my pocket on my desk. And none of that original ethic of the fun of technology is just gone. Yeah. And to the extent that they want to reintroduce fun into the technology, it's through the form of addiction and manipulation, not genuine engagement with the user. And I know that sounds really like sort of abstract and stuff, like I'm not really connecting the dots in any real way, but that's how I feel.
I mean, that's perfectly said. That's exactly how I feel about this.
Yeah. It's really with the upsetting.
Additional element that as a person working in this,
yeah,
it's my opinion in this thing doesn't fucking matter.
Mm.
That's offensive.
Yeah.
And then the words of people like David Sachs or Chamath or these business guys, they can get weaponized against an opinion of someone like me.
Even a mediocre guy like a Mark Andreessen, I'm like, yeah, you made fucking Netscape or whatever. Great, whatever. Let's not pretend like he's the greatest shit ever. I mean, I'm tired of hearing from him.
It's stolen valor at some point. They have some credentials, mostly luck. And I think the best moment in the entire All-In podcast is just the moment when Chamath got real for a split second. I was like, a lot of this is just sheer fucking luck. We were in the right place at the right time and rode this wave up. And none of us are really properly accounting for that. We're all patting ourselves on the back.
But look, luck is fine. Okay. The problem is that they're not technologists.
They aren't. That's what I'm saying. It's stolen value. But they'll open their mouths and talk about all this stuff and call themselves a tech podcast as if they are referring to the technology. They are not.
The only thing about technology that they care is like CapEx. The only thing they care is about
the money they can squeeze out of it.
They like, and in the way, like Chamath in particular is really disgusting because he's such a slick talker and he's just like, you know, he's got this systematic way of talking about tech and it's so, he's a guy from Facebook. Is Facebook even tech? I mean, what the fuck is that thing? And, you know, the way he just talks so with that jargon about exit strategies, paths to liquidity, you know, whatever. It's just like gussed up MBA terminology that is so unimpressive. But you know what? This is what draws people now. Tech to people just became a fucking lottery. You know, it's just
it's a gambling sign. You go to them to talk about, to know which names to look for to throw your chips in with.
This is why I'm telling you, I think Bitcoin is a Trojan horse. I think Bitcoin further distorted and made grotesque the world of tech. And I don't know who fucking, you know, created, obviously no one really does, but you know, I have my suspicions that shit came from like a government, you know, and
it could be, that has been very,
we know that the government was working on such things,
vigorously speculated on before. It could very well be.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any compelling evidence one way or the other, but you can't discredit it. It certainly is real shady.
I'm sorry, but I just really hate the way crypto culture has taken over technology too. It's not fun. Like, I'm sorry, but like crypto is not fun, cool, empowering technology. I'm sorry. It's just not. Like, I don't want to hear these like half-baked theories about monetary policy and, you know, economic like.
Are you saying, the currency? Not like blockchain, the technology.
Blockchain, the technology is fine. I don't really think it's that interesting.
Okay.
I mean, there's some interesting aspects to it, but like, I don't know. I just don't know why people are, you know, I know why. It's because there is a lottery aspect to it and you can make a lot of money. That's it. And I don't like that feel. Like, I don't think that should be at the heart of people's interest in technology. is the ability to, you know, make huge returns off of it. It just, I don't know. It just corrupts it. And it's,
I mean, it corrupts everything it touches. Gross. Who would have thought that, you know, an illustrious aerospace engineering company was also an investment vehicle to pump and dump.
Yeah.
You know, anything, it turns out anything can be degraded. Anything can be turned into, a cheap whore in the stock market, basically.
Have you noticed that in tech, there's a now culture where, like, it's a very competitive culture where people like to prove how much they know. And if they know more than you, they flex on you. Like, it's not a friendly, like, hey, I want to share knowledge and I'm more than, I know a lot. I'm here to spread knowledge. And, you know, like, it's not an open culture. It's like a very, like, elbows, sharp elbows kind of culture, because everyone's just trying to, like, make their living in it and try to get rich off of it. And
not really, because the ones that are really flagrant about that tend to get shoved out fairly quickly.
You think so?
Okay. I do. I mean, I always get the feeling like people are... They exist. They tend to not do well, and they don't tend to be around for very long. Or they get bumped up into management very quickly, because they're really... What they're trying to do is impress people who can be impressed by bluster like that. And that tends to be... They're looking up the career ladder here, not laterally.
Well, that's good. I mean, I'm glad that's still around.
I mean, but... it means that we're stocking management with the ranks of... You know, we're stocking the ranks with absolute sociopaths who don't,
I mean,
give
I
a
look, I went to, I grew up with some serious nerds, you know, and I remember, you know, some of these, like, really unkempt Jesus looking guys, you know, like that would, that would just, you know, they would, like, they would spend their fucking weekend programming some, you know, some client software for some mail protocol or something that didn't exist. And that was their fucking weekend, you know. I remember, like, there was this one guy that lived across the hall from me, and I was having some trouble with my C programming assignment, and I asked him if he could help me, and he suddenly turned into the friendliest motherfucker ever. Like, I was like, dude, I've never seen you this friendly before. He just was so warm and, like, excited to teach me how these pointers worked, you know? And I was like, wow. If you ask this guy a tech question... He just becomes, like, the nicest guy in the world, you know? I was so impressed. Yeah.
The ones who gatekeep, they're not gatekeeping their skill. They're showing something else off. In fact, if you wanted to flex based on, you know, the contents of your brain, then you would actually make a display of, like, showing it off and being very free with it. Because the flex there is like, yeah, I can whip that out anytime. I can whip something out even better than this. So anybody who tries to like get cagey about this gets outed pretty quickly as a complete noob to the scene, and he'll either fall out of the industry or wind up as VP somewhere.
yeah
one or the other. So that's, I don't think it's necessarily all in the spirit of like the betterment of mankind generosity. There's definitely ego involved, but I mean, this industry goes nowhere without the open open sharing of at least, like, some level of knowledge.
Overall, I would say, I have to say, like, the word tech makes me feel a little bit ill these
itchy
days. I don't like the word tech. I don't like what it connotes. I don't like the industry. I don't like the I don't like Kara Swisher. I don't like any of that shit. I don't like the Apple Store.
I can't stand Kara Swisher. She spent a fucking decade and a half cheerleading for the worst character. She enabled all of this shit, gave it glowing press, and then now is pretending to hold them to account.
Yeah.
An independent journalist. What the fuck?
Has Google ever put out something that doesn't suck? You know? I mean, everything good that they ever made, I feel like, came from an acquisition of a company that was once good.
Yeah, they had one core product, which is still good, rapidly degrading.
Wait, and you mean then search? Their search is fucking garbage now.
I mean, it's terrible. I don't use it, but, you know, like, that was their core product. They have ads. That's their big money maker.
I fucking hate Google.
Google Tag Manager, the ads, the tracking pixels, their way to get their clammy fingers all up into your business.
Yeah.
Like that's their product.
Just tech as a whole. Tech as a whole, the whole industry is just too big. There's too much money.
What is it? What is tech? I keep wondering this. Like, if you say tech, people have largely just think of software, right? Internet-based software to boot, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the word technology, the complete physical dimension of technology has even fallen off the radar. That's how bad the co-option has gotten.
Yeah.
Like nobody, if you say tech, they'll think Facebook. They won't think a stereo. They won't think an electric toothbrush or a blender.
Yeah, like WeWork is tech. I don't know. That's a good question because apparently WeWork is tech. How is WeWork tech? I don't know.
I think that's when I first started asking this question.
You know what I think tech is? I think tech
is a grift. I think it's a measure of the grift layer.
How grifty and
between the actual how productive big of a I think how big of a financial
I think it's a measure. It's like how big of a financial returns are you swinging for, and if it's big enough, we'll call it tech.
That's basically what it'd be. And tech is a business model. It's not an actual thing anymore. It's just it's
anything that you could like you could convince the market is scalable. You know,
that word.
Scalable. I mean, you know, shit like that.
Nothing about this makes sense. Nothing that I claim, despite anybody who looks at me would say that's where I work. And like, I don't claim this. This is awful.
Yeah. It is awful. Well, all right. The goal, I think the good thing about doing pods.
Oh, and the aspiration that if you are, quote, in tech, you should be trying to move away. If we're talking career aspirations, where people go, this it's really offensive to me. This assumption that if you are, quote, in tech or you're on the technical side of it, like actually producing the code, crunching the numbers, I don't know, cleaning up the databases, you're the next rung up on the... Your goal is to stop doing that and head into management as soon as possible. I find that pretty offensive, personally.
Yeah.
It implies a certain hierarchy.
Well, and you know, aside from the career aspect of it, I think also like in the cultural aspect where we say, oh, this person's really into tech. I'm like, no, they're just really into phones. Like they're really into apps. They're really, you know, their head is really virtual. Their world is really virtualized. I don't think that means they know what tech is. That doesn't, you know, like,
yeah,
maybe I'm just being an old fogey here, but like, to me, being in tech means like you understand the workings of like a digital computer. What does it do? How does it actually work? Or how does this machine work? Whereas now
you're not just peak consumer. You just,
yeah, exactly. Now tech, it's become this bullshit cultural marker to be like, I really like buying technology. You know, like I really like using a new phone. I'm really into new phones. I like to use the latest tech. And I'm like, actually, people who really love tech, you'll find that they often use like they don't buy the newest shit. You know what I mean? Like the people I knew like that were super great coders, like they didn't have like the latest fucking they were using like some beat up old fucking box that
if you're using it to like make your living or this becomes an extension of yourself.
Like, it's have you ever seen Linus Torvalds' computer? Like his old ass.
Oh, yeah, it's like basically duct taped together. Yeah,
exactly. You know,
because it becomes a tool. You can't port it over so quickly. If you can, then well, all that meant is that you just bought the packaging. Really, you don't really live a life on it. So tech now means everything but the thing itself and the people making it.
Yeah.
That's some shit state of affairs right there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it does bug me. That's the line between a tech and a geek, honestly. Mm. I mean, between a nerd and a geek. Nerds are the ones that are in it, making it, they understand it, they care about it. Geeks are the peak consumers of this stuff.
I just hate the lifestyle sheen, and I don't know who I blame for this. It doesn't really matter, but like it's just become an aesthetic, and it's a faux tech, you know.
But I think it's actually moving away from that. I know what you mean. Like, I mean, at least my like I'd have friends who were really like incredulous if you know, the last phone I had for like 6 years, the last laptop I used for work is like 5 years old or something. You know, and their houses are all like, their fridge was like they had one of those smart homes where everything was networked.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah. And I'd be like, why aren't you on this? Like this is your industry. Like, cause I don't need my fridge to be on the internet.
That shit is dumb.
Yeah. I don't know why, I have literally no need for one of those, what is it? Like Alexas or Siris or the Alexa bots that sit in your kitchen or something. I don't actually need it. Why would I have it? I don't use it.
And they, you know, they completely dismiss slightly older technology. And I'm like, but you have no idea how it works. you don't have any understanding.
You're dismissing about it. Like I bought and returned. I wanted to upgrade my stereo equipment, so I bought a Bang & Olufsen. So those things are fairly, you know, they're not the top end, but they're not like Harman Kardon or anything, you know. Like they're a good like mid tier brand. The quality was so crap.
Oh yeah. Well, that's a very lifestyle brand. Bang & Olufsen. It's kind of like it's always some very like cutting edge. Or some very like non-standard design where the thing is clear.
Like it fit it like the wood trim was nice and it had a small form factor and it promised big sound. It was so bad.
Yeah.
It was so bad.
B&O is definitely like consumer grade high end. It's for consumer.
Like if you care about the sound, you wouldn't you shouldn't
absolutely
buy it.
Absolutely not. No one would seriously take B&O as a, you know.
And that's like, but that's like, that's the current thing. It's sleek. Mm. It's meant to look good in an upscale home.
Yeah.
Things like that. That's the actual product.
Yeah, but they've never advanced, like, you know, they're not like Sony. Like Sony has pushed out really, or Sony Philips, like they invented the fucking CD. You know what I mean? Like they created really cutting edge technologies. They were actual technology companies. B&O is a design company.
Yeah. I got a lesson, a very expensive lesson in that very quickly.
Yeah.
I was so happy back to return it.
Those Japanese companies, I mean, and European companies, and Philips was one of them. They were like literally creating groundbreaking new home technologies. I remember the first time my dad brought home a CD player. Blew my fucking mind, even as a kid. My dad would sit there and explain to me how this works. I'm like, why are these discs so shiny? You know, and holy shit, you just press a button and it just goes to the next, you know, like it was crazy. And they were, you know, they were regularly doing shit like that. But these days, have you noticed ever since the smartphone came out, there's like fewer and fewer like new techs that... like a new class of machine that comes and blows my mind away, you know, like we don't get that. We don't get
what the chicken and egg relationship is on that, but I know it started coinciding right around the time we stopped literally making shit in this country. It stopped being a value.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. Yeah, that is true. I also think that it has to do with the fact that everything became software. And I mean, so we don't get new get new machines anymore. We get new apps.
All this labor had to go somewhere. It all went to software.
Yeah.
I mean, don't you remember that? Like this was like right around 2000, you know, when, you know, we really started offshoring everything, like gutting manufacturing. There was a lot of disdain for manufacturing like constructed around this time. Like you were supposed to be glad that all this pollutant, dirty, blue-collar shit was moving overseas.
Yeah.
And we can keep our hands clean and, you know, in our ivory towers typing on our MacBook Pros and pulling $1 billion out of literally nowhere.
You know, China's probably a different place. I mean, I think they're probably getting new shit all the time where they're like, whoa, this is pretty cool.
They are. Like, we are uniquely starved for options.
Though personally, I think a lot of it is a little hoo-hoo. I don't think that it's the same as when we were getting... like CDs for the first time.
Now, see, it's the throw shit at the wall kind of thing. Here, it's very kind of linear, top down. Like it's very carefully orchestrated. We do a very you know, distinct process that rolls a thing out, and then you roll the next iterate. It's very regimented. Like, we don't do chaos. We don't do a whole bunch of copycats. It's generally looked down on. China is where you're throwing shit at the wall constantly.
It's true, but I still think you need that. I still think the smartphone and the advent of, like, basically, what's essentially unlimited computing power for our purpose, for an app purpose, right? Okay. Yeah, you basically have unlimited computing power now on a smartphone, because it can either do it on board or it can connect, you know, to a server somewhere.
Sure.
That it's basically became like the super, like, one, the all-in-one tool. Like, it's so fucking well designed to be like a replacement for everything. It's a camera. It's a GPS system. It's a fucking Fitbit tracker. It's a fucking flashlight. It's a fucking radio. It's a TV.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's new, like, archetype shifting, like, paradigmatically different technologies emerging.
I just think it became the Swiss Army knife of almost like a huge swath of technology. And so, mm-hmm. like I said, like, I think what used to be device-specific devices and inventions are now just completely virtualized and released as an app. And I feel like the smartphone actually killed a lot of technology by turning it into software. And it just...
Fair.
You know what I mean? And so that relationship just... You know, we just get apps now. I think we've
crested the number of apps being put out there. We seem to have hit some kind of peak.
Yeah,
it is going down. That whole paradigm is shifting. This could mean the rise of the mega app.
Yeah, you mean like a WeChat type thing?
Yeah, they're all late to the game on that, but you know. Yeah. That certainly could be the next iteration on that, which turns like apps. And there's an app that's a Swiss Army knife of apps.
Yeah. I don't think that's really going to change anything.
I don't think so.
I think it'll change business models.
It'll consolidate. I would just like some more competition. Yeah. Honestly.
I would like some more machines. I would like, you know what I mean? Like, I like physicality. I'd like, you know,
Well, do you think like consumer grade stuff is going to come back? Like, I mean, one thing that the phone didn't kill and kind of hyper-intensified, like the men's watches seems to have taken on a whole new dimension in the phone era, when you can't even rationally justify having a watch and a phone in your pocket. And I still see men like dropping a lot of serious cash and a ton of like energy and attention on watches.
Yeah, though I wouldn't consider watches technology in the same sense. They are, yes, they are. I mean, obviously they are technology, but I find that to be in the men's watch space, that tends to be more conspicuous consumption, and it's more like jewelry.
Okay,
so I'm not.
That's fair.
Watches are
That's
interesting. Fair. I would say they are mechanically very cool, but I feel like it's a lot of the obsession is very status driven. Yeah. Because, frankly, I have a lot of friends that buy watches, and they know a lot to talk about this model, that model, but they don't know how the fucking escapement works, or, you know, they don't really know how that shit works. So, you know, they're not like watching.
I never got into it, so I know nothing. I don't
they're
know
collecting nerds. Really they're collector nerds, let's put it that way. So,
but, yeah, there's a difference between liking tech and just collecting a ton of it.
Yeah, exactly.
There really is.
Yeah.
In the level that we're at, we're supposed to just keep at the level of consent. That's the only engagement we are allowed to have. Mm-hmm. I think I hit a certain peak. Like, I had all the stuff I wanted and a lot of stuff I actually didn't and shouldn't have gotten. And that reshaped my the nature of my relationship. Collecting more things didn't make me happier or enrich my life in any meaningful way.
You know, here's an example of how technology that's really cool gets appified and becomes much less interesting is the blur function on a lot of camera phones, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason that phone apps have universally now, I think the iPhone camera actually does this almost automatically. Like, it's very close to the, like, if you go to portrait mode, it pretty much does this automatically. It blurs the area in the background, right? and keeps the person's face in focus. And the reason they did that is because that's the look of an SLR. That's the look of film or large or more professional style photographs. And that's the way wedding photos would look. And the reason that that happens is because when you have a large aperture lens and you have a with a larger sensor, the depth of field goes down. And so you get this blurred background. And it was in the camera community, the optics community, that first started noticing, you know, it used to be considered a negative thing that you had shallow depth of field because you wanted as much stuff in focus as possible. I don't want to take a blurry picture. But then they found out, like, actually, there's a certain I think Japanese camera designers were the first to notice this, because the word for it is bokeh, which is a Japanese word. It's the sort of aesthetic quality of being blurred out. It looks nice. A really well-designed lens, the blurred background looks nice, but it's all about the limitations of optics. And, you know, a photographer is supposed to learn, like, if you're learning the skill of photography, you're supposed to understand how depth of field is affected by all these things. It's how it's affected by aperture, how it's affected by sensor size, things like that. And so there was this whole very interesting education in optical physics that you would have to kind of undergo to become like an effective photographer. But now they see on a phone, the phone's a small sensor phone. You don't get that blurred background. You can't achieve that look with like a small sensor phone. And so what they do, they created software to go and artificially blur the background. And that's what I mean by like this virtualization of all technologies. This used to be the physical thing that happened out of necessity, just by nature of how optics and physics work. And they worked, they figured out a way to like kind of make the best out of it. And then comes along this app that was like, oh no, I'll just like create it for you.
Oh, it does it? I think it does it automatically.
It kind of does it automatically in a certain mode now, in portrait mode.
Yeah.
And it's simulating the shallower depth of field of like a different set of optics. And see, people are, they're not going to be curious about that. They're just going to say, oh, it's a filter. But they're not going to look into like, why does it have shallow depth of field? Because it doesn't. It's an app. It's a filter. Whereas if you're using an actual camera, you have to ask yourself, why does this picture have shallower depth of field, narrower depth of field than this one? And you start to realize, oh, it's because why does the aperture affect that? And then you have to kind of understand optics. And that's what I mean. You know, the camera, the phone camera will never be a teaching tool when it comes to how optics and photography actually works. It's just a picture taking app. Whereas a camera, a real camera, it will lead the user into deeper understanding of how it works, because in order to use it properly, you have to know how it works. Does that make sense? Like that's why I just find smartphone photography to be so uninteresting. You know, and it's sad because they're getting so good at it that there's no difference between the two. So nobody cares, you know, nobody cares about the technology anymore. Nobody cares about the optics, optical design. You know, they're just like, oh, just put a filter on it. It'll look the same.
Yeah, it's hard to articulate the value of that, except once you see it, you can't unsee it.
I think the value,
it's a thing that's definitely lost. Once it's gone.
I think the value is that we used to live when we only had cameras. Anyone who wanted to take a picture had to go through a rudimentary sort of physics education. And I think just people were just smarter because of that. You know what I mean?
That's definitely true. Yeah. I mean, then should we all go back to non-power steering cars and stuff?
Yeah,
I think the answer kind of is yes, actually.
Yeah, but we're not.
I think
going
it's kind of shocking that people get in cars every day, but I don't actually want to know the number of people that can that can explain like a combustion engine, like a four-stroke combustion engine, or what a transmission does, or a carburetor, stuff like that. Like, we don't know so much, and I think our lives are materially worse. It provides more opportunity to get us to scam us because we just don't know. We'll take someone's word for it, and in that space, that's an opportunity for someone to get rich off of your ignorance. It's dangerous.
And we remove the ability to master technology. Like with real photography,
you are at its mercy.
You're at its mercy. With real photography, using real cameras, you can become an expert photographer. But I don't think you can say the same about someone who uses a camera app on a phone. Like, I'm not saying you can't take good pictures, but you're not going to master the art of taking smartphone pics, because there's no art to it. You just press a button and the computer makes all the decisions for you. You know, whereas mm-hmm. with a camera, there's no smart computer. I mean, I guess some of the new ones have it, but like for a real, you know, for a basic camera, you know, it's just you basically have 3 degrees of freedom, right? And you got to figure out how to use those 3 degrees of freedom to make the picture you want. That's how you become expert. And we don't have that anymore. People don't understand shutter speed. They don't understand, you know, focal length. They don't understand ISO. You know, so when we make everything into an app, I feel like it strips you of the growth potential of becoming like an expert or a master of a particular type of tech, because it's just everything gets reduced to a button. You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
driving. Like, you know, every driver that I know now literally is just an instruction follower.
That's what it's come to, yeah.
They're just listening to, I mean, just to go to the fucking grocery store, they're just having this thing just tell them, make a left, make a right, get in the right lane. You know, and it's like they're shit drivers now. Like, they can't drive without this thing. They don't have any spatial awareness. They're terrible drivers, but they always get to where they're going. So what does it matter? It's this dependency on technology rather than this sense of learning and mastering it. And that it's just a very,
we really are just talking about WALL-E. Go watch WALL-E.
I've seen it. Yeah. Yeah.
No. I'm like, all y'all listening, if it's not hitting, go watch WALL-E. Mm. We're really just describing WALL-E.
I guess, yeah. I mean, that's the message of WALL-E. I think it's really apt because they're all
reliant on this ship that does everything for them. So they've lost complete, you know, competency in everything. They don't know how to feed themselves. They can't walk. They don't know how anything works.
Yeah.
And so they just live these very vapid, materially comfortable, but extremely hollow, empty lives.
Yeah.
And it just takes that one captain who's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm standing on my own 2 feet, literally.
Yeah.
We're going to get this plant home and then deal and then just hack it at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's kind of seen as like re-engaging and coming back to terms with your own humanity.
Yeah.
There's no substitute for the feeling of mastery that you've accomplished something. I think what the modern world gives you is the sense that you've done something without ever having accomplished anything. You do a lot, but you don't really get that sense that you've achieved something.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like now it's like, you know, there's this sort of dismissal of people who like don't want to use the latest tech because they want to do it themselves. And there's a subtle accusation that such people are Luddites, like they're anti-tech. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like it's a fundamental inversion of the relationship where I don't want to rely on the tech, like in that sense where you're stripping me of my faculties. Like the tech should be an extension of my faculties, you know, which is, I think, the original idea.
I should be able to make it fit into my life. I shouldn't have to work so hard to find my way around this thing.
It's an incredibly powerful tool, and I want to know how to use it in the ways that I want to use it. I don't. It shouldn't be an experiential, you know. It shouldn't be on like a sort of like grooved track where I'm supposed to use it this way, mm-hmm. you know, like it's a thing, it's a payoff machine where it's like, if I use it, I set it up the way they tell me to set it up. I use it the way they tell me to use it. And then I have the experience that they want me to have, which is what all out of the box technology seem to be now.
Yeah, which means you don't, it's not really yours. You can't make it yours. You are renting an experience from the overlords.
That's what it is. You're having the experience they want you to have. And you're a passive consumer of it. And they lie to you. I think they kind of lie to us and say that that's not what it is and it's going to empower us. But those commercials are always full of shit. You know what I mean?
It's like, all those commercials are all about people actually in the physical world, too.
Yeah.
You notice that? Like, it's all like a phone, but then they pick up the phone, but then like their lover shows up at the door or something. Mm-hmm. They manifest like their business, their flower shop or something. Yeah. Like, A, the ads got really vapid, but even the ads are saying like you deal with our shit long enough and well enough, and the rewards are very, very much in the physical world.
In the physical world, yeah. 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 And we know that's not the case.
No.
Yeah. They're completely whitewashing, you know, what actually happens with this stuff.
I mean, the weird thing is, like, the only thing I get ads on with any regular is YouTube. Mm-hmm. I should just get YouTube Red, but I'm enjoying the ads too much, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mistake software and pharmaceutical ads all the time now.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's some middle, you know, like, very kind of generic looking person smiling vapidly into the middle distance while nice soft music plays. And then some vague promise of some improvement in your life. I mean, like deviates when they start talking. Yeah, so the same vibe as a pharma commercial.
Yeah. Oh god.
Like, that's pretty, please that's tell pretty me that on the
it's
nose.
It's not like Ozempic or something where it's just, I can't believe they're pushing that stuff. It's crazy. Oh my god.
It's crazy, except like we keep living it. So at some point this just has to be like, yep, this is entirely precedented.
Yeah.
Because of course it is.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I definitely feel like tech, the idea, the way tech has developed, it's kind of like they've manipulated the culture so that if you're against it, you're a Luddite, you hate tech. And I think people And I think the reality is if people who actually love tech, like I love tech, you love tech, will actually hate this culture. And it's not anti-tech. It's anti the co-option and corruption of tech to serve the profit interests of people who seem to hate tech. You know what I mean? I feel like the people who are advocating this stuff actually don't understand technology or don't really have much of an interest in it. They just want to make money off of it. It's
just a simple, like, very, very, you know, exploitable resource in their opinion. So,
Don't fucking tell me that Eric Schmidt is someone who really understands technology at that level. And therefore we should talk to him as the chief innovation officer in America, or whatever the fuck purpose he's serving. No.
Oh, no. Is that an actual thing in America now?
It's something like, I think Obama had something like that. But like Eric Schmidt now is a liaison with the Defense Department.
That's been a thing though. Like, he has his own office at the Pentagon.
He has his own. And so his job is not to help America innovate. His job is to help the Defense Department leverage Google and other such services to spy on its users. That's what he is, you know, but he's
positioned this is what I'm bringing to the table.
He's positioned himself as sort of a Steve Jobs type who I don't know how you feel about that, but I think Steve Jobs was closer to like a bona fide technologist than some of the fucking CEOs that we have now.
Absolutely.
So you know,
yeah,
I always I actually appreciated see him as such. Him. Even though, you know, he did have to, you know, he did usher in the era that we're in now with his fucking film. Yeah. But whatever.
I mean, he was part of it, but not of it. I think he had the thing that differentiates him is his he did have an obsessive drive for perfection in his, you know. It's not a thing that money happened to follow, but I don't think he was willing to degrade his product for the sake of money. I'm not a scholar of Steve Jobs. This is just my impression just from like reading about his work style and how demanding he was of his engineering team and designers. This isn't the same as Boeing deciding to like sack all the you know, quality assurance engineers and do everything in software.
Yeah, no, I don't think he was like that at all.
He was obsessed with quality.
Yeah.
Obsessed with quality. And I think it cost him at various points too. Mm-hmm. Like squeezing Apple for every single dime wasn't necessarily the top of his stack.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of a low bar, but this is where we're at, because CEOs seem to have an antagonistic relationship to the companies they are hired to run. They're hired to squeeze this shit dry.
Yeah.
And then bounce before it all implodes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I think that really, you know, we need to get out of especially large company economics in terms of technology, or not get out of, but we need an alternative to that. And to the extent that there's really cool tech that I like, it's going to be like smaller manufacturers and makers, you know? And like,
yeah, I think I want a re-expansion of the term tech. Like, what is it? Like, I bought a really great blender.
I mean, I'm still talking about computers.
Is that tech? Okay. I'm still messing around with the question, like, what is tech? Like, what is technology? Right?
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends on the context. I guess for now, I'm using it still in the context of computing.
Okay.
And I would say, like,
yeah, I think people may be demanding as shit. It's obscene, the lack of choice we actually get. Yeah. In this country, over the physical devices that we spend our entire lives on. Like, this is why people overload on like the keyboards and the speakers. We don't get to really mess around with any of the other components that make up our computing experience.
Yeah. But I mean, like a small manufacturer like Synology that makes the NAS, like they're actually, at least when it comes to me and how I use the thing, they're in competition from my perspective with like Google and Microsoft and their cloud services, because I don't need mm-hmm. their cloud services anymore, you know? And so this is like, you would think that to take on Google or Microsoft, you would need another big, huge company to come and compete with them at the same level and offer a different product, but actually, or a competing product, but actually this little, I think it's Synology is probably a pretty small company. You know, they make these like, home servers, and they can completely replace what Google offers. There's not in search, but more in Google Cloud. Google Cloud.
I don't know if they got bought up and shut down. There was a huge wave of those. I think like SanDisk was in that game.
Yeah.
A lot of the router companies went that direction for a while too, but I think they got acquired in the shutdown. That hostile acquire thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, the business world is so ugly. I hate it.
Yeah, but I mean, this tech, but they're not going to get rid of this tech, you know? Like, okay, Synology might get bought out or whatever, or QNAP, but like
somebody will pick up the banner.
Someone will pick it up. This isn't like secretive or proprietary technology. It's just a home server.
I'm just kind of curious how many people out there who came up in the era of the smartphone and the quote the cloud even know that this is an option.
Very few.
See, but, that's like, you know, that's to me part of the corruption, right? It's like there's a story by Michael Pollan talking about, you know, the scam that free range chicken is in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way it works is they're not all like wandering in a pasture under the warm sun in the fresh air.
Yeah.
What happens is they're all crammed into a barn, the same way as like non-free range chickens. The difference is that there's this little tiny little patch, like tiny little like maybe 3x5 foot patch of fenced off area.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a door that connects the interior to the exterior. And he was wondering, why is that patch so small? Surely they need more space for all the chickens that are inside. Turns out if you keep the door closed for the first like 3 weeks of its life, after that point, if you open the door, the chickens will not go outside.
Mm. Wow.
Like, that story always stuck with me. So like, now we're at that point where like successfully the attention of Americans have been hijacked for like a decade plus, right? Mm-hmm. The iPhone came out in 2007, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So almost two decades. How many people are out there paying for like Google Cloud or all the different services? Doesn't Microsoft have one too? All of them have one, probably. Mm-hmm. They make it super cheap. So it's what, like $1, $2, $3 a month, which can... it's so frictionless to just lease your data to them like that. And nobody knows that there's a physical solution that you can have right in your home.
Yeah.
That's what I'm kind of scared of. Like the consumer has now become so degraded that, you know, the relationship can get as predatory as they want. You know, and there's literally no defense.
I think consumers are pretty smart, actually. And I think, maybe not your average one, but I do think that if you look at how when consumers get interested in something and how deep they go into it, they can spurn like quite a bit of manufacturing and profits from that. You know, like
yeah, if we can get past that, you know, considerable hurdle.
Yeah, but
again,
you know,
we're talking about the attention casino and the grind of everyday life.
Yeah, but you know, I think people are starting to tune it out. You know, I think
I hope so.
I think a lot of like at least. Older people, like people who've had enough of it, have had enough of it. I've had enough of it, and I think a lot of people have had enough of it. And you just tune out. I mean, there's no way for them to force you. Like you said, it's not 1984. They can't force you to watch this stuff or care about this stuff. You know what I mean? And the smartphone's fucking old. I mean, it's shocking how people still talk about the smartphone as new technology. I mean, this thing's been around for how long? You know what I mean? It's yeah. And it hasn't changed. Yeah. This is old technology, guys. You know what I mean? Like, when did the fucking smartphone come out? Like 2005, 2006? I mean, we're going on 20 years pretty soon, right?
The iPhone was the iPhone was the first smartphone, right?
Yeah. Well, let's call it this first. I don't think it was absolutely the first, but yeah, the first modern smartphone.
First generation,
the first relevant
iPhone.
2006?
Yeah. 2007.
2007?
January 9th, 2007.
We're coming up on 20 years with this fucking thing. Mm-hmm. Ain't new tech. We're still talking about smartphones like they're this cutting edge technology. I'm like, they're 20 years old. You know, when the CD was 20 years old, were we still marveling at it? No, we weren't. I don't know what it is with the fucking smartphone, but we're just obsessed with this thing. I think people have had enough.
Well, it got boring. Like, nobody stands in line.
Yeah.
Nobody lines up outside the Apple store for this shit anymore. Yeah. Like, that's for sure. That era is long, long faded. Yeah.
But we kept this fucking thing going for a long time, and I don't think it's going anywhere. I just think maybe we're less enamored with it. I don't know, but like, you know.
So you think people are gonna come back to the physical world at some point?
I think they already are. Don't you think? I mean, okay. Isn't that tech nostalgia, right? Like, it is about that, isn't it? We're asking for things where we can find it. To make it more like what we used to have, you know?
I hope so. That's definitely a gap that needs to close. Like a lot of nostalgia is just about like kind of museum level respect and interaction with these things of the past, but not really dragging it into the needs of the present.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So if that circuit can get closed, then I'll start to be a little bit more optimistic.
I mean, small things, like, you know.
Yeah, just nobody knows how the internet works. Nobody knows how storage works, how data transfer works. So just right now, I'm not sure how many people would even have an understanding that a physical device that stores all their shit, that they can still access outside the home.
Yeah, I saw something really interesting. Like, I saw... They're using e-ink for like a new tablet-based, kind of like Remarkable. But it's actually like just a writing device. It does nothing but act as a rudimentary word processor.
Oh, okay. I'm talking about the... I saw that too. Yeah.
And, you know, someone thought like, you know what? There might be a market for this. Mm-hmm. And someone looked at the e-ink and was like, you know what? What if we made a tablet? Like, it's not going to be great for video consumption or anything like that. It's not a multimedia thing. But it'll just be really text-based and handwriting-based. And we'll use e-ink, which is terrible for video, right? And it has sold pretty well, as far as I can tell, right? Like, people like the sort of more, like, function-specific... Like, you know, like a specialized device, right? Not
that was a big gap in my in my routine. I don't know if it's because, you know, like it's the, I was the last generation that kind of had to handwrite a bunch of stuff before word processing really came through. I still remember stuff better if I write it down by hand as opposed to typing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So like not being able to have like pen and paper handy, you know, has really bugged me for a long time. So the Remarkable really changed the game for me because I can write and read on that thing.
Yeah.
And you don't have to connect it to the internet. So this was a win.
That's the other thing. Yeah. I the fact that it, you know, it comes with a subscription. I know, but I heard you told me that you can use it without it. Yeah, I really like that. And I like the Kindle too. The fact that like, I don't have to connect it to Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I can just keep it in air. I keep mine in airplane mode pretty much all the time. And I just sideload books, you know, and I love that. I love having a thing that's just dedicated for reading. I don't want to read on my fucking phone. Hell no.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love having an ebook. Now, it's not perfect, but I just like the fact that there's like dedicated thing and that there is a quality to the display that matters, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
A display that's specifically created for reading, and I just don't feel like I'm allowed to keep this thing on fucking airplane mode so that it can't communicate with the outside world, and that's okay. And I'm allowed to do that, and you know, they can't update this thing so that they can take away my sideload capabilities and all that shit.
Yeah, wonderful.
You know, the Kindle really does feel like something I own.
Good.
So long as you keep it in airplane mode. I heard the second you
take I just don't trust Amazon.
No, I don't trust Amazon either. But I'm saying that I got one where you can, you know, the you can still keep it in airplane mode. I heard though now, like if I take it off airplane, it automatically updates and it kills sideloading. And I'm like, then it's useless. It's a brick to me.
See, that's antagonistic. That's some BS.
Super antagonistic. Yeah. So I want to go there and literally rip the Wi-Fi chip out, but you know. That's what I do. I'll cover the whole thing in tinfoil. You know?
There you go.
That'll be the tinfoil hat like future where people are just like, no, fuck it. My phone is exactly how I want it to be. So I covered it in tinfoil because it can't update itself.
Nobody can fuck with it.
Exactly.
We laugh, but it's gonna happen. Man.
Yeah. Totally yeah. All right. That was good.
That was.
You know, I might just put this one as the episode.
I mean, we had two full length.
Do the other part as we could release it some other time. But this was the better talk.
I think so. It was a lot more concise.
Yeah,
and it was an hour. So
yeah.
All right. Maybe.
Cool. Thanks, Jess.
All right. And we'll see you
later. Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.